If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody. Good folks listening to RJ Hinder and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard. Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
So at home, I do some hand loading of ammunition. I don't really want to say reloading so much because generally I'm using brand new components. And one of the rifles that I hand load for is the 416 Remington Magnum. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, 416 Remington Magnum is one of those African cartridges for the Big Five. On North America, you could hunt any of the following. You could hunt large elk or moose, buffalo, or bear, especially something large like the Kodiak bear, which is the largest bear in the world. So the 416 Remington Magnum, I got this gun with the scope on it. It's a Remington 700 action. It's got a Swarovski 1.5-4 power scope on it. It is the scope that African hunters for Big Five want. It is the exact scope that they strive for. I got this whole package. I got it on a deal from a friend of mine who used to come out and train with me. And then after I got the gun, I realized that the rounds are between $5 and $8 a piece. This is a couple years ago when I got the gun. Now the rounds are upwards of about $10 to $12 a piece. The reason being that ammunition manufacturers are concentrating on the very popular, more defense type rounds right now when it comes to manufacturing. They're not getting into a lot of the wildcat things such as that. They're doing some hunting rounds. They're doing a lot of defense rounds. But they're not getting into more of the specialty rounds. 416 Remington Magnum is one of them. It's a difficult round to find when you can. So a lot of people hand load it, which is what I do. And as it turns out, I ended up with way more brand new empty shell casings than I could use. When I'm said and done, when I've got all of the ammunition loaded for this gun, I'm going to have somewhere around 300 rounds for it. I've yet to even fire a round out of the gun itself, because I haven't had a reason to. But I am keeping some rounds to the side to do some sight-in on the thing and get a feel for it. But I ended up with a whole bunch. I was doing inventory on a bunch of my casings and such over the weekend, and I found that I had about an extra couple hundred casings for this 416 Remington Magnum. So I ended up putting them up on GunBroker, see if they can go from there. There's a few different people that sell 416-related items on there. A lot of them are 416 Rigby. There's even something from a 416 Taylor good round. But the Remington Magnum, 416 Rem Mag, that's actually what it was a 375 H&H Magnum, necked up to accept a 416 caliber bullet. From 300 to 400 grains. Most of them are 350 to 400. So if anybody happens to load that round and you're interested in any of those casings, I've got some listed. I think the auction numbers, it's just ones and threes. It's like 1333131113 or something like that. And if you have any interest in knowing a little bit about that particular round and why I chose 416 Remington Magnum, you can shoot me off an email, and I will cite my sources on it. Just all-around good, solid caliber. It doesn't have quite the kick of, say, like your 458 lot or some of your Weatherby rounds, but it's certainly bigger than the 375 H&H, which a number of professional hunters have said is, even though it's technically and legally the bare minimum to shoot the Big Five in Africa, it's really not up to the task, so carry something bigger. A lot of research that I have done has sent me over to the 416 Remington Magnum, and I was just lucky to find my friend Ken actually available to, you know, he was getting out of the gun. I wanted to get into it, so there we go. Someday I'll actually go out and shoot the thing after I've loaded a couple hundred rounds for it. It's been kind of a backwards process. I want to cite a reference book that's out there and available used on Amazon.com. This is the book that really got me understanding all about the rifle. And it's called The Book of the Rifle. It's written by a guy by the name of Jim Carmichael. Jim Carmichael spent decades, I'm not even sure, he may still be there, as the shooting editor for Outdoor Life magazine. Jim's written a lot. He's certainly edited a lot. And he wrote the book called The Book of the Rifle back in the late 80s or early 90s. It's been out of print for some time. But it is a fantastic read. And it is, if you're a rifleman, or you want to be a rifleman, or you want to be a better rifleman, it is the Bible that you must not go without. A good friend of mine in Las Vegas, who retired after 33 years on Las Vegas Metro, a guy by the name of Steve Franks, Steve told me about this book years ago, and he lent me his copy out of his own library. And I took the next 2 or 3 weeks to read this book in my spare time. I was so impressed with this book. About halfway through, I went onto Amazon, I found it, and I ordered it. And I ordered a copy that was in pristine condition and had been autographed by Jim Carmichael himself. Now, Steve's book had been gone through. Several people had read it. It had a bit of wear, but it wasn't in bad shape by any means. It had just had a bit of wear. When I got this new book in, the one that I ordered off of Amazon, the one that had been signed by Jim Carmichael, I was impressed by the condition of this book. It was in wonderful condition. So rather than give Steve his book back and then me hold on to this nice, pristine one that had been autographed by Jim Carmichael, I gave Steve the nicer autographed book, and as thank you for having turned me on to such a wonderful and fantastic reference. This book talks about everything. We're talking about materials used in guns. We're talking about different stocks, stock materials, stock designs. There is talk about progressive rifling, barrel lengths, burn rates within these different lengths of barrel. There's an entire chapter on African rifles. There's an entire chapter on North American game rifles. There's a chapter on going prairie dog and shooting it at varmints with varmint rifles. It's just absolutely amazing, full of information. Jim Carmichael, in his own right, is an educated guy. He knows a lot about engineering and physics, so he is an authority to be able to write on these subjects. And he does get a little technical on some of the things, but as soon as he does, he then breaks it down so anybody can understand it if you don't quite have the engineering or physics or technical background into such a thing, so even when it comes to machining or woodworking. A lot of history involved and a lot of different tests that had gone on to either solidify a theory or to blow the holes into a theory, such as progressive rifling, as an example. Talks about the smooth bore of the old muskets when they first went to a single ball going through these guns. It's just a wonderful, wonderful book. Very interesting to read. And when you're done with it, it becomes a reference manual for certain things. Once you're done with the whole deal, you want to go back and look up things for varmint rifles or for going through the looking for a gun for African Plains or even the Big Five. Another excellent reference. Pull it off the shelf. Reread that chapter. It is fantastic. He shares a lot of personal stories in there. If you can go to Amazon.com and look it up, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael, starts with a C. And I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Jim Carmichael got together with another fella, and I don't recall his name. They developed a wildcat round called the 22 Cheetah, C-H-E-E-T-A-H, and the C and the H are both capital, because the other guy that Jim Carmichael worked with, his last name started with H, so it's capitalized to homage the two of them. The 22 Cheetah is a 22 caliber round that would fire in, say Remington 700, some sort of varmint rifle, 22 caliber varmint rifle, that with a 1 in 16 inch twist achieved something like 4,600 feet per second muzzle velocity, which is unbelievably fast. I mean, just unreal. Very, very impressive. And accurate as the day is long. Just very interesting stuff. I ended up buying a Remington 700 Etronix rifle in 22-250. And I figured if I ever shoot the throat out of that thing, I will probably have the barrel rechambered to 22 Cheetah and have an electronic firing 22 Cheetah just to be different. I have no problem in having the occasional unique gun here and there. That's okay with me. It's more the defensive hardware that I'm not willing to experiment with very far. I don't want to go so far outside of the box that if I need to grab another rifle for parts or repair, I'm not out of luck because there's nothing out there. So anyhow, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael. If you're interested in bench rest shooting, by the way, he's got a wonderful story in there about an incredibly windy day in Tucson, Arizona, back in the 80s, when he pulled out a 220 Swift, and just a stock 220 Swift, which is not generally looked at as a bench rest gun or bench rest caliber. However, Jim knew that it was not affected nearly as much by the wind on this incredibly windy day as most of the other rounds out there. Now, Jim didn't win. He did come in second that day, and he goes through the entire story. And the interesting thing is, whoever won has probably been long forgotten, but that Jim Carmichael came in second with a pretty well stock 220 Swift. That's what people remember, a non-standard caliber that he brought out on a windy day, because that caliber is inherently affected far less by the wind than many of the other rounds that are out there in bench rest competition today. A little bit more coming for you.
Interviews from SHOT Show 2010 coming up next.
So stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Hi guys, welcome back. This is your host Bill Carnes with 2A Radio. Standing here with Deb Farnes of Babes with Bullets. Now, you are the director, correct?
I'm the director, and then Kay Clark Michalik is actually our camp founder and our head instructor, and Lisa Munson is one of our other senior instructors.
Now, Babes with Bullets, you train women out on the range defensively and also into sporting uses, correct?
Well, actually, we train them with the idea of action pistol, because we know that they've got to learn how to shoot and shoot on the move first before they can do anything else. They've got to know. They can't stand up there and just be afraid. We take absolute novices, and we take them in 3 days, about 900 rounds, and we take them from being absolute novices to being proficient with a handgun, ready to go on to other things, be it international defensive pistol or if they want to go on to United States practical pistol. We get them ready for that.
That's fantastic. Now, you specialize in training women.
That's correct. All of our instructors, like Kay, like Lisa, like the other ones you meet at SHOT Show 2010, all are national and world handgun champions who are still actively competing, who train other women. So it's women training women. It doesn't get any better than that.
Fantastic. All right, tell us a little bit about your background and getting together with the Babes with Bullets and the inception of the whole concept.
Well, I'll make a really long story short. I'm married now a couple of decades. I've got two daughters myself. I never learned or never touched a gun until I was 45 years old and my daughters went off to college.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, well, I've always been afraid. My husband keeps wanting me to learn because he hunts, you know, and everything. He wants me to learn. And I finally thought to myself, well, let's try it. So on my 45th birthday, I shot a gun for the first time. Found out, okay, I'm all right.
Now, on your 45th birthday, did he give you a 45?
Well, he actually did give me a 45 to shoot, but I ended up with a 9 that I was comfortable with.
That's good.
And so I was going around, and then I competed for a couple of years, just what you might call more tinkering with it, trying to get my balance, so to speak. And then in 2004, I met Lisa Munson at a USPSA match. She invited me to K. Clark Michalik's home range in Shreveport in April of 2004 to shoot with other women, which, of course, I never got to do. you know, I was always shooting with men.
It seems like a male-dominated exercise, doesn't it?
It does, but I have to tell you, just to give you a for instance, here it is in 2010, I now have 28 women at my home range in shooting with me.
Doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't get any better. And we all nurture each other, and it works great. But bottom line is, in 04, then I went to Kay's, and definitely not world-class shooter by any stretch like Kay was. They nurtured me. They brought me along. I went home. I wrote a book called Babes with Bullets. I got with Kay in 05 and said, Kay, we're on to something. Let's go ahead and take this show on the road with three-day camps and take it across the country, which is underwritten by Smith & Wesson.
Tell me some of the places that you've done some training, some of the places you've gone and maybe back at.
Well, Orlando, Florida, actually the Titusville Club. So Orlando, Florida, of course, we always have a camp in Shreveport near Kay's home range. Tucson at my home range, also Phoenix. We have camps in Piru, Houghton, Burbank. We've got a camp coming up in Albany, which is an hour from Portland, Oregon, at the Albany Rifle Club. We have another one outside Syracuse. We have one coming up at the Otis location. We've had them in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Brownell's place, the Brownell's range in outside of Des Moines, Iowa. We've got them coming up near Niles, Michigan by South Bend.
So you're all over the country. Now, tell my listeners how they can find out more about Babes with Bullets.
They go to babeswithbullets.com. Easy website to find. We also on that website have range tips for her, guns and gear for her, handgun 101 for her with all the little webisodes so that the ladies might like to watch and not feel intimidated.
Sure, yeah, get an idea of what to expect.
Yes, and then what we also have is a link that takes them right to Kay's site for them to sign up so that if that camp is already booked, it'll show them right away what's going on. Our camps do book out months and months and months in advance.
Okay, you're talking about 3 days, around 800 or 900 rounds. Usually, what days of the week are these things held? What's the cost?
Cost is $650 for everything except, meaning the housing, the range fees, the instructors, targets, you name it. But it's everything except the ammo and everything except the airfare to get there. But the food's included, the housing. We all stay in big lodges together or condominiums together because part of the camaraderie for us is in the evening. You know, we train them all day on the range, and we nurture them in the evening because you've been on the range all day. A lady likes to come back, have a glass of wine and a facial, and then we'll teach them how to pull a gun apart.
Yeah, you know, I've been in similar situations with guys, but we just always end up hitting the bar and drinking at night. You guys are actually being productive.
Yeah, we actually are productive. We are actually productive.
Imagine that. That's kind of the difference with the sexes.
And the thing is that for the first couple of years, Kay, who is, as I said, a several-time world and national handgun champion, and she's been brought up from it. Her father was, you know, a famous bullseye shooter in years past. But Kay always said to me, it's a shooting camp, Deb. It's a shooting camp. And then we will get back dozens and dozens of emails in a month saying, I cannot tell you how empowering this was for me. I cannot tell you what a fear factor guns were for me until I went to camp. But we know it because we see them up there shaking like a leaf. And then all of a sudden, on the third day, they're proficient. What a difference in 3 days.
It's fantastic. Deb with Babes with Bullets. Thank you very much again. BabesWithBullets.com. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much. It's been a joy.
All right, guys. Stay tuned. We got more interviews to come. SHOT Show 2010. This is Bill Collins live.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, this is your host, Bill Carnes. Again, I'm out reporting live at SHOT Show 2010.
And right now, I happen to have Larry Keene of the National Sports Shooting Foundation, NSSF, the host, the sponsor of SHOT Show 2010. Larry, thanks very much for your time for the program.
Well, I'm glad to spend time with you, Bill, and welcome your guest to listen to us here from the floor of the SHOT Show. It's the largest trade show of its kind in the United States, and it's not open to the public. It's for the, it's a trade show, but it is the 22nd largest show in the United States, and it's a major source of revenue for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which is the Firearms Industry Trade Association.
What is your position with NSSF? I want everybody to know I'm actually talking to one of the big wigs here.
I'm the Senior Vice President and General Counsel, and so one of my primary functions is to operate and manage the NSSF's government relations program.
You know, I've got to tell you, this is probably my sixth or seventh SHOT Show that I've been to. And I got to tell you, this show here at the Sands Expo, because traditionally when it's been in Las Vegas, it's been at the Las Vegas Convention Center. This is a fantastic venue for this show.
We have in the past, most always, at the Las Vegas Convention Center. We were last here in the Sands about 10 years ago, and the show was much smaller then than it is now. So we're just a little bit under 700,000 square feet, but our attendance is tracking to look like this will be the largest and most well-attended show we've ever had in our 32-year history. There's a lot of very positive energy on the floor. Our major exhibitors are telling us that they're very pleased with the turnout of the dealers and the energy, and a very, very positive feel to the show that I think portends well for the coming year in sales for the industry.
Well, I got to tell you, this place is elbow-to-elbow busy. It's just great. You guys have done a great job for 2010.
Well, I appreciate that. And as I said, we expect this to be the most well-attended show ever. I think we're going to, if it tracks, we'll hit 60,000 attendees and exhibitors. And that's about 5,000 more than we had when we were here in 2008 at the Convention Center.
Fantastic.
The National Shooting Sports Foundation is the firearms industry's trade association. We have about 5,500 members. So all of the largest firearms and ammunition manufacturers in the United States and the scope manufacturers and our members, as well as distributors and retailers, dealers all across the United States, and really companies that make anything that you put in, on, around, or through a firearm. And we have a couple of missions at the National Shooting Sports Foundation. One of them is to promote the industry, to promote hunting and target shooting throughout the United States, and to create additional opportunities for folks to go out and exercise their Second Amendment rights to purchase a firearm, but then to go out and not leave it sitting in the closet or in the gun safe, but to go out and participate in target shooting, participate in hunting or sporting clays and things like that. So we have a number of programs that we do along that line. Like one new program, relatively new program we have, is called First Shots, where we work with ranges to have promotional opportunities to encourage new shooters, folks who have never fired a handgun before in their life, to come out and give handgun shooting a try. And, we found that a large percentage of folks that have tried it for the first time come back, participate in target shooting again, and actually go out and buy a handgun and exercise their Second Amendment rights for the first time in their life. So that's an important program to bring new shooters into our community. And we have other programs that we do, particularly in the government relations arena, where we work to try to form dealer groups in states like California, New York, and elsewhere to organize
you
them.
The four dealers left in California?
Well, it's actually the SHOT Show, the largest number, the plurality of dealers come to the show are from California, although the number of dealers in California unfortunately continues to shrink, and the public policy choices that the legislature make there obviously make it a very difficult place to do business. But we did form a California Association of Firearms Retailers that is growing, that has had some important victories in the government relations arena, defeating some legislation. Not always. It's a very challenging environment in Sacramento. There's a lot of very hostile legislators there that don't respect the Second Amendment and don't respect the right of law-abiding Americans to own a firearm or to participate in the shooting sports. So,
now, speaking of that, when we're talking about the retailers in California, The ones that sell ammunition are coming up on an unfortunate event, February 2011, with the heavy, heavy restrictions on handgun ammunition. How are you guys handling that? What sort of feedback are you getting out of your retailers, and what's the plan?
Well, we worked very aggressively to try to defeat that legislation. Unfortunately, Governor Schwarzenegger signed the bill into law. We defeated similar legislation a number of years ago. The governor vetoed the bill back then. It's very very frustrating that he signed the bill into law. It will now, among other things, require sell ammunition. You'll have to have a license, and you'll have to keep a record of who you sell the handgun ammunition to, and you'll have to take a fingerprint of the purchaser of the ammunition. And all, of course, this will do nothing to reduce crime in California or anywhere else.
It'll do plenty to reduce income at the state level through taxes, and certainly do plenty to reduce retail sales at the counter.
We estimated, we had an economist look at the issue and estimate the lost income from tax revenue to the state, and it was considerable, and the cost to the dealers to comply, which was considerable. So it's a frustrating situation, particularly since dealers used to be required under the Gun Control Act originally, up until 1986, to keep a record of ammunition sales. And ATF testified before Congress back in 1985, 1986, that they did not find that record keeping was at all of any use to them as a law enforcement tool and did nothing to reduce crime. And so Congress did away with that requirement in 1986. And that was one of the reasons why Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed the bill a couple of years ago. And so it's very frustrating for him to now sign this into law. And he signed a number of other pieces of legislation that, were hostile to the Second Amendment. And it's very frustrating.
I have a question for you. You have a lot of smaller retailers that sell handgun ammunition. Now, have you had much feedback on any of these guys saying, you know what, it's going to be such a pain in our backside to have to deal with this. We're just going to opt out of selling handgun ammunition as of February 2011.
Well, among the other requirements, and in fact, one of the requirements of the bill, it's effective now, became effective at the beginning of the year. And that requires handgun vendors, dealers, to keep the handgun ammunition off the floor of the store. It can't be accessible to the consumer. It's got to be kept inaccessible, basically under lock and key.
Yeah, behind the counter.
Behind the counter, and that adds cost to the dealers to change the store configuration so that, you know, you as a consumer can't come in and pick up a box of shells and compare it to another box of shells. You have to get the dealer to come in and help you and make that product available to you. And all of this is supposed to reduce crime. And, of course, there's no evidence that there was any kind of problem
criminals
or issue.
Criminals don't follow the law to begin with. Well, otherwise, they wouldn't be criminals.
Well, that's kind of a definitional thing, isn't it? So that's already effective and as an increased cost operating your business. And I think, again, for other outlets that sold ammunition that weren't firearms retailers and weren't licensed to sell firearms, they now have to have a license to sell handgun ammunition. So, you know, places like a grocery store in a rural area or a package store in a rural area might stop selling handgun ammunition rather than incur the cost to comply, and including, as you mentioned, the additional requirements that kick in next year, where they have to keep the log and the fingerprint. So I think it's very likely that some of them will just stop carrying that product because it's not worth the hassle.
Now, Larry, I'm gonna pose something that I said on the show before, and feel free to answer it as delicately, as aggressively, or unobtrusively as you like. We pretty much go for the throat on Republic Broadcasting Network. So here's the deal. My whole feeling on this deal to get the legislature of California back is either get all the retailers or all the manufacturers as of February 2011 in California simply to just refuse to carry handgun ammunition, so that would bring up some sort of a backlash from all of the people who are purchasers and users of handgun ammunition to force the legislature's hand to repeal that law. Now, has there been any talk of this in the industry coming out of California?
Well, we see that whenever we see restrictive laws passed, like, for example, when they banned 50 caliber, there's discussion, there's some suggestions that ought to be done. There are, I'll answer the question as a lawyer, which is what I am. There, companies can't have those sorts of conversations with each other to boycott sales into the state. That would raise some antitrust implications. You know, the companies have to make their own individual decisions about how they operate their business. And certainly, as the Industry's Trade Association, we can't tell them how to run their business. And, you know, they are, at the end of the day, competitors, and they, trying to make a living selling a product. you know, whether individual dealers decide they want to stop selling handgun ammunition and forego those sales in hopes that there's some backlash, that they're going to have to make that decision for themselves.
Let's move on to a movement that's been coming across the country in the last year, and that is the state's rights over guns. We have Montana that passed their law and implemented it. We have Tennessee. New Hampshire has a very aggressive bill that's going to be introduced this year so they'd be exempt from federal regulation. And one of the provisions in the bill that's going to be introduced in New Hampshire this session is it allows for criminal penalties if a federal agent came to New Hampshire and tried to impose some sort of federal restriction on one of the state's guns. How does NSSF see this sort of movement going from the people within the industry that are members of NSSF that are within these different states, and how these things are really going through the country?
It's an interesting constitutional question about the intersection between the 10th Amendment and the Commerce Clause that gives Congress the power to regulate interstate commerce. And if you look at the Supreme Court jurisprudence on the Commerce Clause, the court has found that it's a very broad power and gives Congress a lot of authority to regulate commerce, even in cases where it wouldn't seem to the layman to be interstate commerce. The sorts of issues that you're talking about here, whether if a product is made entirely in the state, never leaves the state, is only sold in the state, does the federal government have the authority under the Commerce Clause to regulate that, or does the 10th Amendment and state sovereignty trump that? And so I think those bills or those laws that have been enacted are going to get litigated and get challenged. And ATF, I believe, has put out some notices to dealers in the states, like Montana, I believe, and it said that the Gun Control Act bill applies and would apply, and, you know, essentially says that notwithstanding the state law, you still have to comply with the requirements of the Gun Control Act.
And you know, Larry, I read that letter, the one that went to Tennessee and then a couple of days later to Montana, on the air a few months ago when it came out, and I fully agree. The ATF has the ability to do that with people that have federal firearms licenses, right, be it manufacturing, sales, or what have you. My contention is, if there's going to be a company that's going to get into manufacturing, another company's going to get into sales, another company might be in the middle with distribution, they're going to have to be created from scratch and not have anything to do with the ATF or a federal firearms license, because anyone that does, say, in Montana, Tennessee, or any other state that enacts such a law, if they do start to produce, manufacture, sell, retail, distribute, whatever, anything under the state provision with a federal firearms license, they're going to be up on the red flag federally. It would have to be essentially an entire new industry within an industry.
Yeah, well, there are some economic realities, I think, to that. Whether, you know, in a small state like New Hampshire, if you whether you could, you know,
supply the 1,500 residents.
Yeah, yeah. Whether you could do that and you know, you'd be successful at it. It does, you know, it's a very interesting legal question about where does the 10th Amendment stop the Commerce Clause powers of the federal government. I can tell you that in past Supreme Court decisions in other industries, not the firearms industry, you know, they have held that, you know, products that are, you know, even grown in the state and sold in the state are still subject to the Commerce Clause power. Now, whether the court is going to roll back the Commerce Clause powers, and you know, the Supreme Court recently did that in a gun case, where they said that, you know, the Commerce Clause did not give the federal government power to regulate how close somebody could be to a school with a firearm. And so that was the first time in some 60 plus years where the Supreme Court kind of reined in the Commerce Clause. So it's a very interesting question.
I'm just wondering if there happens to be anyone who's a retail or manufacturing or distributing member of NSSF that has posed any of these sorts of questions based on those laws, or if that's not, if it's only, we're dealing with a couple of states, if it hasn't shown up on your radar yet.
We're aware of it. It's not, certainly none of the major manufacturers that are, you know, are here at the SHOT Show, or even the smaller manufacturers that are selling their products, you know, in interstate commerce and foreign commerce, would be subject to the Gun Control Act. And so I don't think it's really something that they're giving a lot of thought to, frankly, because it just wouldn't impact their business. They're clearly selling in interstate commerce. They're selling to customers in different states, and that's clearly subject to the Gun Control Act.
Sure. So, well, hopefully we can have this conversation at SHOT Show 2011.
Yes.
And maybe there'll be a little bit more retail action. Maybe you'll have the instead of the National Sports Shooting Foundation, you can have that and the 50 little guys in each of the states.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have the Nevada Sports Shooting Foundation coming up soon.
So one of my primary functions is to operate and manage the NSSF's government relations program, where we have lobbyists that work for us in Washington, D.C., and we have a number of lobbyists that work in states like California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, and Massachusetts. Typically don't have to worry very much from an industry perspective about bad gun laws getting passed in places like Nevada and Alabama, Mississippi. We have the governor of South Dakota here trying to get companies to move to South Dakota because they honor and respect the Second Amendment and want those companies to relocate to South Dakota. And quite a number have, and I know that a number of companies are actively considering it. And in fact, the governor of South Dakota, and is here at the show, sent a letter to all the federal firearms licensees in California recently, encouraging them to consider moving their business to South Dakota, where they're welcome, where their jobs are valued, and the Second Amendment and our firearms freedoms are respected.
I love it. Guns and bikes. I can't wait for Sturgis.
And that's exactly where all the companies are located.
Larry, thanks very much for your time. Again, Larry Keene from National Sports Shooting Foundation. Folks, stay tuned. There's more to come. SHOT Show 2010 Live. This is your host, Bill Carnes, 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Guys, welcome back. We're talking with Wynn Condit from Wyoming. He has Wyoming Big Game Hunt, Wycon Safari Incorporated. And what attracted me to your booth, Wynn, was it says prairie dog hunts on top of the other things that you do. Because we've been standing around about blowing those little rat bastards off the prairie for the last few days here on 2A Radio. Tell us a little bit about Wycon Safari.
Well, primarily on the prairie dog end of it, we do four-wheel drive hunts. We shoot off of benches, and we shoot off of shooting sticks. Your shooting can be anywhere from 20 yards out to 1,000 yards if you want it to be. And so you'll have opportunity to do lots of shooting. We have lots of animals. We have alfalfa fields in the middle of the desert, and so it pulls in a lot of prairie dogs and Richardson ground squirrels. And if you come at certain times of the year after they harvest the hay, the ground just moves with them. So you'll get lots of opportunity, lots of shooting. It's good for the spirit and gives you a good attitude for when you go back to work, because you can forget about all your problems. Probably the two best times to hunt would be the first part of May before the grass really starts to grow. Probably the next best part would be around the first part of July when they start to harvest the alfalfa. And it's the same thing. It looks like a golf course, and you can see those little critters out there moving around. And there are literally hundreds of them, and the ground just moves with them at those two times of the year.
That's just a target-rich environment, my friend.
Target-rich environment. You'll have lots of opportunity to do lots of shooting.
Okay, give me an idea. How many rounds you think they're going to shoot? How many of these little rat bastards you think they're going to plug away?
Well, I would say that on a good day, they'll shoot 1,000 rounds a day, easy. Probably on a slow day would be 250 rounds.
I am there. All right. What kind of platform? You see semi-autos, bolt actions, everything? What do you have?
You see everything.
But a lot of folks have AR-15s that shoot, so they shoot up a lot of bullets.
Okay, so most of that's set up, and basically you're sniping these prairie dogs.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, now that's what I'm talking about. Now, let's move on. You also do elk, antelope, things like that. Tell us about the rest of Lycon Safari. What else do you offer?
My primarily species are antelope, deer, and elk, primarily mule deer of the deer species. And it's a four-wheel drive hunts. We do lots of driving, lots of glassing, and spot and stalk methods is how we hunt. We hunt a lot of open country with sagebrush, and so we cover a lot of country. Those mule deer are smart. They lay down, and we do lots of glassing and try to find them laying down. The elk get pressured off the public land onto the private, and so we do a lot of hunting just out in the hay meadows and that kind of thing. The antelope are hunted primarily on the alfalfa.
It sounds to me like up in Wyoming we're talking about some pretty long distance shooting as compared to somewhere maybe back east.
Absolutely, yeah. Probably the biggest challenge we have when folks come out from back east is they're used to those 50 to 100 yard shots. So most of our shots are in that 100 to 300 range.
All right, how do we contact you?
You can contact me at lyconsafariinc.com.
Fantastic. Wynn, thanks very much for your time. SHOT Show 2010. I'm your host, Bill Karn, on 2A Radio.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday. I will not.